तेजस्विनावती तमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै। ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्ति।
The second chapter of the Gita is entitled as Sankhya Yoga. One of the bigger chapters, longer chapters. Sankhya Yoga, the yoga of knowledge. It has 72 verses, as we said. When Arjuna stopped in the previous chapter, sat down saying that I will not fight after giving out his reasons, he was completely taken over by emotions. Remember, to have emotions is a virtue, but to become emotional is a sin. The inhuman being should have emotion, but he should not become emotional. He should not allow his emotions to take over his decisions, decision-making capacities, his ability to act and function. But very often than not, you find people who lack emotions, who are indifferent, or you find people who are victimized by emotions. Seldom do you find a person who has his emotions under his control. So Arjuna became emotional, and to such a person, Lord Krishna, using his powerful singing words, whipped him up. He said, how on a situation like, in a situation like this, how did you come to behave like this? Arjuna, what are you trying to do, man? This is the horrible thing that you can do in a situation like this. In a crisis moment, you are behaving like this, you want to withdraw, you want to run away. From where did you get this mean weakness of heart? Rising above the mean weakness of heart, Kraibhyam Masmagamam Partha. Naitat Vayubhapadyate Shudram Hudayadavupadya Chaktu Otishta Parantapa. Arjuna, you are Parantapa. You are a structure of force. Rise above this mean weakness of the heart. Don't become, don't behave like a weak person. So he says, he is really giving strong words, not approving what Arjuna has been arguing. Now this wakes him up, Arjuna, and he continues his defense, coming straight forward. He says, Bhishma and Drona are people worthy of worship. We know the story that actually the throne belongs to Bhishma. He renounced it, for which they are fighting now, the Kauravas and Pandavas. And Drona is the one who taught them how to wield these weapons. So he says they are worthy of worship. They are people who are great renunciates, the gurus. We should be worshipping them. I should be throwing flowers at them, offering flowers at them, not arrows at them. Right? I don't know. Then he says, very clearly states his problem. What does he say? I am confused. First time he accepts. I don't know whether it is better for us to leave the battle and go to forest, or it is better for us to continue fighting. He says, my choice is between the devil and deep sea. Because as a grahastha, what am I supposed to do? I cannot beg. Remember this. In our tradition, we have four ashrama dharmas. What are they?
Brahmachari,
Vanaprastha, Sanyasa. Out of this, grahastha alone cannot live on bhiksha. Brahmachari is not earning. Grahastha cannot live on bhiksha. Vanaprastha again lives on bhiksha. Sanyasi lives on bhiksha. Three ashramas can beg. Grahastha cannot beg. He has to earn his food. So if I win the battle, then I will be begging. I will be left with no choice. That is not done. If you ask earlier, he went to the forest and he was begging there, it was not his choice. Now if he withdraws and goes, it is his choice. Are you with me? If I say, okay, I will not go to the forest, I will not beg, I will continue fighting, then I will be committing the sin of killing good people. So if I leave the battle, I am committing a sin. If I fight the battle, I am committing a sin. I don't know what to do. So this is the very, very important portion where Arjuna clearly admits his ignorance. I do not know. From I know, he has come to I don't know. From unconscious, what? Unconscious ignorance to conscious ignorance of not being aware that he is ignorant. He thought he knows. From that state he has now come to level where he is ignorant. Knowing that I do not know is the first step in knowing. First step to know. She said, Karpanya dosho upahata svabhava prichamitvam dharma sammuda cheta yashreyasya nishchitam bruhitanme shishyasteham shadimamatvam prapanna. Verse number 7. I am confused about my duty. I don't know what is right, what is wrong. I am thy disciple, you are my guru. Tell me what is good for me. Yashreyasya nishchitam bruhitanme shishyasteham shadimamatvam prapanna. He clearly admits and surrenders to the Lord. I am confused, I do not know. You know, you teach me. Tail should not wag when the head is there. When Krishna is there, Guru is there sitting. He is sitting and talking as if he knows everything. Right? And Lord Krishna just kept quiet. And Arjuna has now surrendered. It has worked. Keeping quiet and making him exhaust has worked. Now Arjuna surrenders. And first verse Lord Krishna speaks is verse number 11, chapter 2. Giving his sermon. Fascinating verse. He says, Asuchyan anvachosasvam pragnyavatamshabhase gatasun agatasun na anushochanti panditaha. Wise people do not grieve for those who have gone and those who have come. Asochya anvashochasvam pratyavadamshabhasasam. You seem to speak like wise, but your behavior is talking something else. That's what he said. Wise do not grieve. Firstly, they do not grieve for anyone. For those who have come and those who have gone, they don't grieve for none. Why? Not that they don't grieve for these people, unrighteous people. They don't even grieve for the death of what? Righteous people. Why? Because they know the truth of Atma. That is what he continues. Therefore, he starts talking about the nature of Atma. Lord Krishna has clearly diagnosed the problem of Arjuna. Swami Chinmayananda says, we all suffer from Arjuna disease. The disease called as Arjuna disease. And the cure for that is Krishna cure. And how does Krishna cure Arjuna's disease? By diagnosing the problem and clearly saying the problem is what? Ignorance of your true nature. If you know your Atma, then you will not be talking about these things that you were talking earlier. So therefore he starts off with giving the nature of Atma. What is your real nature? Who are you? He says you are a personality of three C's. What are the three C's? Container, the physical body, contained the reflected consciousness or mind, the consciousness, the pure consciousness, Atma. Each one of us are a combination of what? Container the physical body, content the mind, the consciousness, the Atma. The problem is, we do not know anything about our real nature, the Atma. We only know maximum about body and mind, container and content. So we know that the container is born, a date of birth. Along with the date of birth, we also know that one day this container will perish. We see so many people who were born, perished. So what happens? The more I identify with my body, the more insecure I start feeling. If you analyze it, if you see, every one of us are attached to the body. Firstly to my body, then to my children who are born through this body, then to my parents who, because of whom I was born, and the other brothers and sisters of mine were born. Everything will be in and around body and body and body. This is what is the problem of Arjuna. My relatives, my cousin brothers, my grandfather, my this, my that, you understand? So, really, what is the problem? The real problem is not knowing who this I is. As a result of which I keep saying, this is mine, this is mine, this is mine. This is me, this is me, this is mine. This is me, this is mine. So he straight away goes to that and talks about Atma. Atma is unborn. It is eternal. It is changeless. It is all-pervading. It is indestructible. It is independent. It is inconceivable. These are verses from 12 till 25 of chapter 2. He's talking about nature of Atma. Right? 12 to 25 is what?
Nature
of Atma. Your Atma is not born when the container is born. Vasamsi jivnani yata vihaya navani gunnati naroparani. In that verse, beautifully in verse 22, he says, when the body is born, remember the body is only the vesture. Body is only the vesture. The Atma is the wearer. Body is what is worn. And he says, just like how you throw away the worn out garments, you also throw away the body when it is worn out. Now the question is, who decides whether the cloth is worn out or not? The wearer. Right? You throw away certain clothes, saying that it is worn out, you can't wear it anymore. But there are other people who in the world who are ready to wear them.
Yes.
You, the wearer, decides when it has become worn out. Your vasanas, your resultant of your desires, determine when it is ready to be thrown away. And it is the desires that take up the fresh clothes. You go to office in the morning, you wear a set of clothes, you work in the air-conditioned environment, you come back in the evening, from 9 to 6 you've been working, by the time you reach home it was about 7, then you throw away that clothes and then wear your other set of clothes to go and play tennis maybe. You play for 1 hour only, then you find them worn out. You throw it. Some clothes you were wearing for 8-9 hours, some clothes only for 1 hour. So a lot of people ask, some people die at the age of 3 to Some people die at the age of 90, 100. How is it? If you say the weather is deciding, nobody is consciously decides to die. Nobody believes that they will die. Yet they die. Why? The sum total of all their desires, the resultant determines their death. So the wearer gives up the body and wears a fresh one. When you throw away the worn-out garment and wear a fresh one, it is for your good. Continuing to exist in that body is not good for you. So Lord Krishna says, the body is born, the body is given up. When the body is born, Atma is not born. When the body is given up, Atma never dies. And when the Atma is living in the body also, body cannot influence the Atma. It's a beautiful saying in English. They say, stone walls do not a prison make, nor iron bars a cage. You are imprisoned in a jail. Only your physical body can be imprisoned. Your thoughts cannot. So gross cannot control the subtle. It is the subtle that controls the gross. So, come back to that stress. The external factors are all gross. You, the Atma, is the subtle. Subtle should be able to control the gross. But why do we get stressed? Because our identification is also with the gross. The gross can control the gross. Gross can influence the gross. Are you with me? That is the problem here. So what is death? Death is nothing but, how does Vedanta define death? Death is when your body is perishing, your mind and intellect, the sukshma sharira, leaves the body and takes up another body in the medium of pure consciousness. There is a frame A and frame B. Frame A is fitted with mirror. Frame B may, there is no mirror. Sunlight is all pervading. It gets reflected in frame A because mirror is there. In frame B it doesn't get reflected because mirror is not there. Now, if you detach the mirror from frame A and attach it to frame B, what do you see?
Sunlight reflected
is dead with reference to frame A. It is born with reference to frame B. Yes, Sama?
Yes.
So, similarly, Atma consciousness is all pervading. It is subtle. When a person dies, you see the physical body there very much. What is obviously left is the sukshma sharira. So Vedanta says, when your subtle body, along with vasanas, transfers from one gross body to another gross body, in the medium of pure consciousness, it is death.
Can we try this?
Yeah, transference of subtle body or content, the way I have defined it. Container, content, consciousness, I told you, right? So, transference of subtle body, or within bracket, content, from one container, gross body, to another gross body, container, in the medium of pure consciousness, it is death. Consciousness, udriya, it is always there. Are you with me? This is what? Death. Atma being subtle, it is not touched. Weapons cannot cut Atma. Fire cannot burn Atma. Water cannot wet Atma. Wind cannot blow your Atma. Atma is subtle. It is not gross. Therefore, the wise people do not grieve. explaining why most people do not grieve. They externally may manifest certain shoka because the manifested self is gone. That is obvious. But inside they very clearly have this knowledge, as a result of which we are not allowing the external sorrow to have an effect on them and make them become immovable. They don't allow those shoka to become depression, etc. They are not goods. They also have feelings, but it is not affecting them. In our case, it affects. The affectation may be for a few months, maybe for a few days, I mean for a few years, or lifelong. So he says, Atma is subtle, being so, it cannot be destroyed. Now from mundane, this is from the highest standpoint, from mundane point of view, even if you think, because you now identified with content, then also there is no problem if you have identified with container and content. Why? Container ko kya hoga? Recycle hoga. Isn't it? Like they say, dust to dust. From dust it came, it gets recycled. Many, many years later it comes out in the form of petrol. Isn't it? Or nothing but what? Same thing getting recycled. There is no loss, actually speaking. Matter can neither be created nor be destroyed. You know this, isn't it? It just gets transformed into some other. And if you see from content point of view also, content goes. You were a small child. You gave up the body of a small child and you became young man or young woman. You've taken up young woman's body. Now what is that? You are still continuing, huh? Then you gave up youth body. You took up old woman's body. Hair color changed. What is happening? You still continue. Nothing is happening. Exactly like that. You give up this body. You take up another body. You continue. Content continues. Usme kya problem?
The content is mind
entity. Continues. Jiva continues. Still it realizes the self. But it is never bound. So there, from the point of view of container, no issues. From the point of view of content also, it's going to continue. So where is the problem? He says, Arjuna, continue your duty. From the, you understand? From the content point of view also, there is no problem. Therefore, from duty point of view, you are a kshatriya. Arjuna, being a kshatriya, your duty is to fight. If you happen to be the hangman, hangman doesn't even know whom he is hanging. Judge, after going through the merits of the case, passes the judgment. And if he has passed the judgment, to hang the convict. Hangman is just going to hang the fellow. He is not going to gain any pap out of it. He is not going to incur any pap out of it. Isn't it? So he is telling Arjuna, body will anyway perish, whether you kill it or not. And understand one more thing, body perishing is according to their karma. You are only an instrument. You understand? The hangman is not in any way the cause of convict's death. Convict's death, what is the cause of it? Not even the judge. Who is the cause?
His own action.
So in Ramayana, as per the Ramayana story, who killed Ravana?
He himself killed himself.
You say this in the class, but in the exam, write Ram. Otherwise, you will fail. In the practical sense, we know that Ram, Lord Ram, killed Ravana. Lord Ram is not a serial killer, interested in killing people. Ravana killed himself. Really? So he is telling Arjuna, why is he explaining all this? He is saying, Are Arjuna, you do not know the wisdom from the absolute level or even from the practical level. Just because you happen to be the one who aimed an arrow at him and that arrow went and took away his life, you are not the killer. All the more when you do not have any intentions. If you have intentions to kill, then you will have to face the karma. You have no intentions to kill them. Are you with me? Being a kshatriya, do your duty. Very beautiful construction he says. In this portion, if you see, he says, whatever comes which is unsought, yadrichaya labha santushta. You should be acting in the world without any expectations. In the sense, being a kshatriya, you continue doing your duty. As an outcome of your actions, as a byproduct of your actions, whatever comes, live by. That's all his life. He puts it so simply. In fact, for the wise people, it is so surprising. How come you are not able to live like that? You have a certain nature. Just live. Expressing your nature. And as an outcome of the expression of your nature, whatever comes, you live happily in that. But no. What we will do? We will see somebody else. Oh, he is having those facilities. I do not have these facilities. A dog in the house has a certain duty which it does. A donkey has a duty which it does. Donkey is transporting the clothes. Dog is doing the duty of a watchman. Therefore, at night when dog barks, the owner will come and pat the dog. Doing good job, good job. If the donkey breaks, he will whack it. This is the problem. Instead of following our nature, we all want to follow somebody else's nature. Being grahastha, Arjuna doesn't want to follow the nature of grahastha. He wants to become sannyas. How do you become sannyasi? By following your nature. This is what Krishna is trying to say. So he says, you must do your duty with that idea. Edrichaya labha santushta. Hence he continues to explain karma yoga, which he calls as buddhi yoga. So after having explaining from the absolute point of view, the nature of Atma, and the container and content point of view, mundane and beauty point of view, he now goes to elaborately talk about karma yoga. Now the interesting thing is, because you have got the knowledge, now you have to plunge into action. With the knowledge, if you plunge into action, you will be renouncing the fruit and acting. That is called karma yoga. You won't be renouncing the action, but you will be renouncing the fruit. Remember this. We have already started 5th chapter, which is called as Karma Sannyasa Yoga. Now we are doing the summary of chapter 2, 1, 2, 3, 4 today. The second chapter is called as Sankhya Yoga, the third chapter is called Karma Yoga, the fourth chapter is called as Jnana Karma Sannyasa Yoga. In Karma Yoga, what is he talking about? Karma Phala Tyaga. Not karma tyaga. By doing karma phala tyaga over a period of time, you are risen above, you will rise above desires. As a result of which, you will be giving up your actions also. Karma tyaga. That is sannyas. Are you with me? But if you go to sannyasi lifestyle, sannyasi also will be doing certain actions. Maybe not the same actions as the grahastha. So, he says, now, so far I taught you Sankhya Yoga. Now let me talk on Karma Yoga. Then in Karma Yoga, which he calls as Buddhi Yoga, Why is it called as Buddhi Yoga? Because it is a conscious action. Karma Yoga liberates you. When you don't do action in the spirit of Karma Yoga, it's called karma, that binds you. So Karma Yoga is what? Conscious action. I've told you this before many times. You fall into a pit unconsciously. Nobody will fall into a pit consciously. All our troubles we have got into today because of doing actions unconsciously. A desire comes, unconsciously we get involved in the desire, temper the desire, make it a conflagration which was a spark, and then now we say, I'm suffering. Unconscious. You know George Bernard Shaw's definition of a cigarette? Very interesting definition he gives for cigarette. He says, a little tobacco rolled in a piece of paper, fire at one end and a fool at the other. You understand? Only a fool will be igniting himself. Isn't it? But he is such a fool that he is igniting himself and exhaling with such ego as if he is conquered something. Isn't it? So he says, ignorantly, unconsciously you do your actions. Now do actions using your buddhi. In this there is no loss. And it also doesn't produce any contrary result. And it will not give you any insecurity. You will be absolutely secure. So karma se, come to karma yoga, don't go to sannyas. Arjuna wanted to go to sannyas. Krishna is saying, don't renounce the action, renounce the fruit of action. Why are you worried about the kingdom and all these things now? This is an opportunity for you to just do the duty of a kshatriya. Afterwards the rewards may come, rewards may not come. That is something that happens afterwards. Why are you sitting and worrying about the child which is to be born after you get married? You're still not married. So just be in the present. When you do your duty in the spirit of Karma Yoga, there is no loss. Firstly, the fact that you act with your intellect, you will be achieving the good, getting the result. Secondly, your vasanas will be reducing because you are not keeping your eye on the result and acting. As a result of which your vasanas will reduce. So you will get both worldly success and spiritual success through Karma Yoga. It will not produce contrary result. If you do karma, it produces contrary result. Why?
Your mind is set on karma.
Your vasanas will increase. Not only your vasanas will increase, your desires cannot be fulfilled all the time. So instead of producing peace, you will be getting agitation. In fact, the moment you get the object of your desire, what happens? What do you get? Happiness is what you think. But actually, shoka starts. Later on he says, the fifth chapter we are going to do, he says, since enjoyments born of sense contacts are wounds of sorrow. Dukkha yonaya. Yoni means womb. Dukkha means sorrow. Yonaya means wounds. Wounds of sorrow. Isn't it? Somebody had stolen Rabindranath Tagore's Nobel Prize. If you got something after so much of effort and you achieved that object of your desire, immediately what comes to your mind? I should not lose it. Worry comes. How worry? Reserve. I've got a good name. the biggest problem, lot of people say, all I want is, I should die with this good thing. My name should not be spoiled. You understand? My name, if I raise some questions, I will be termed as mad. Therefore, I rather suffer rather than questioning, maintaining the good name. People go through hell, contrary results it produces. If you run after the world thinking that it will produce happiness, it will actually produce sorrow. Whereas if you do the actions, the spirit of karma yoga, which is giving, then it will produce perfect result of happiness. Because why do we do anything? We do anything only to find happiness. It will produce that. And there will be no bhaya. Absolutely no bhaya. Why? What is karma yoga? Karma yoga is, thy will be done, not my will be done. So where is there anything mine to be losing, to feel insecure? Nothing is mine. And if it is lost, nothing is lost also. In other words, it is called as trusteeship attitude, not ownership attitude. People suffer from insecurity because of ownership attitude. You go to a hotel, some coffee or some stain falls on the hotel carpet, no accreditation. You come home, expensive carpet, coffee spills, 3 days, your heart has coffee. Why? Mera. In karma yoga, there is no insecurity because I am myself part of the total. And I am myself part of the total. Where is mine and yours? There is no insecurity. So he says, you must cross over the Vedas, karma kanda, and come to Vedanta and experience the truth. Don't get stuck in Vedas. Lot of people get stuck in the first three portions. I told you, remember, mantra ba, brahmana ba, or nirvana. They just get stuck in this, which is various rituals in the Vedas for you to fulfill your desires. People are just going on fulfilling their desires, producing contrary results. They think by achieving more they become happy. They get more agitated, more and again more agitated. This is going on and on and on. Therefore he says, you don't get stuck in karma kanda. Do your actions consciously. He's not criticizing Vedas. He's saying, when you go through the karma kanda portion, when you are in a grastha ashrama, enjoy your senses. There is no taboo. But following dharma with awareness, when you contact, you will be going through bhoga and you will be becoming a yogi. You understand?
Huh?
It's from 41 onwards. 42, 43, 44, he criticizes
karma.
Criticizes in the sense getting stuck there. In other words, Vedas you have to go through and then come to Vedanta. What happiness is there in Veda will be included in the happiness that will be brought by Vedanta. But the happiness that you get in Vedanta, you will not get it in Veda. Yavanatta Udapani, verse 46, he says, in 45 he says, Traigunya Shaya Veda. Vedas talk about Traigunya, three gunas. Mystery Gunya Baba Arjuna. Rise above. So you consciously go through your experiences, you follow your rituals, whatever that might be, but do it consciously. Then slowly what happens is you rise above. Otherwise you will be stuck there. Right? Then he gives the blueprint of right action, you can say, in 47. Karmani eva adhikara ma phalesu kadachana ma karma phala heturboho ma te sambhostva karmani. Right? Karmani eva adhikara. You have rights only with reference to action, never to the fruit. So many people's action put together will bring the result. Your action is only a small drop. Knowing that, you continue putting in that small drop and leaving the result in the hands of the ocean. Such a person, what happens to him? He will be in yoga, samatvam yoga mushate. And he will be performing his actions skillfully, so peacefully, remaining balanced in all his life. And through meditation, he realizes the self. Upon realizing the self, he becomes a sthita prajna. Sthita prajna crosses the delusion and finds the self. Now, Arjuna is asking, who is this sthita prajna? So in other words, if you take Karmani eva adhikara, there is a beautiful poem by Robert Browning, Remembrance Funeral. These are few lines that you see on the board from the poem. That low man seeks little things to do, sees it and does it. Low man means humble person. This high man with great things to pursue dies ere he knows it, before he knows it. High man means egoistic person. That low man goes on adding one to one, his hundreds is soon it. This high man aims at a million and misses a unit. So karma yoga, you just function doing what you have to do. One after another you achieve. At the same time, your mind slowly becomes free from the world. As a result of which you rise and become eligible to gain knowledge, and by after gaining knowledge and through meditation, you realize the self. So when Lord spoke about the state of sthita prajna, which you have to reach, you have to become sthita prajna, then Arjuna is now interested to know, who is this sthita prajna? Please define, explain sthita prajna. So Lord Krishna, next, we're going to talk about sthita prajna in the next 18 verses. Definition of a man of perfection. How does he walk? How does he speak? How does he sit? These are the questions Arjuna asked. Sthita prajnasya ka bhasha samadhisthasya keshava sthitadi kim prabhasyeta kim asita prajeta kim. Then Lord Krishna immediately says, prajahati yada kamaan sarvam partha manogatam atmani eva atmana sushta sthita prajna sthaduchyate. Who is the sthita prajna? He says, when the desires come, he is able to watch them and not get identified with them and then give them a direction. Prajahati yada kamaan sarvam partha manogatam atmani eva atmana tushtaha sthita prajna sthaduchyate. In other words, one who is mindful all the time, one who is awake all the time, one who is with awareness all the time, he is a sthita. In our case, what happens? When the desire comes, slowly, slowly awareness goes, all our actions are mindless actions. Mindlessly we do many things and then we regret. So who is a sthita prajna? From his mind the desires have been emptied. What remains is only awareness. With awareness he continues functioning in this world. Such a person is called sthita prajna. Dukkeshu anudvigna manaha sukeshu vidatasthiraha vita raga bhaya krodaha sthitadir muniruchyate. Remains the same in sorrow and joy. He is beyond fear and anger. There is no emotions controlling him. He controls emotions. He goes through dukkha, he goes through everything. Sorrow, joy, everything like you and me. But they do not touch him. So he is dynamically acting in the world. He is not somebody who is run away. Excuse me. He is very much in the world. As long as you live in the world, world will have its effect on your body, mind, intellect. But since he is identified with Atma, the effects on the body, mind, intellect does not touch him. Yes, sarvatra anabhisneha tattat prapya subhashubham nabhi nandati nadveshti tasya prajna pratishtita. He is a dynamic person without attachment, as a result of which he functions spontaneously like a tortoise. Tortoise moves about in the world. Tortoise moves about in the world. It has a hard shell covering it, the neck, four legs and tail, they protrude and it walks. Upon sensing any danger, immediately it comes out of the hard shell. Like that, a man of perfection has perfect self-control. With the self-control, he moves about. That is what is meant to say. What is self-control? What does self-control mean? If the car is parked, you are sitting on the seat and holding the steering and saying, car is perfectly under my control. Does it make any sense? So when you say car is under my control, the car should be moving. So self-control is not self-denial. I am not contacting the object at all and I say I am controlled. Not in the world at all, say I am controlled. Self-control means you are in the world, the car is running, but you are controlling. When does control come? When you have perfect understanding, control comes. Once upon a time, we did not understand the lightning, thunder and all these things. Now science has understood them, therefore they are using them, they are controlling them. You understand? Always earlier we thought Indra is angry with us, this is happening, that is happening. So whenever you say control, what it means is watchfully going through the contacts with the perfect understanding, you call that self-control. So self-control is not applying brakes. It is in contact with the perfect watchfulness. That is called self-control. So you know exactly how it functions. When anger comes, you are not aware now. You don't understand how anger functions. When anger comes, slowly it takes over your body, then your hands are shivering, you are not able to stand, and your mouth is tackling, and you are going, you understand, mad. Your memory is losing. You are not aware of all these things. Self-control means you are watching. Anger is coming, he's saying something. The breathing is going, doing like this, my hands are, you are very much aware, then you control. It's called self-control. So he says, physical abstinence per se, rasa lingers, but in case of self-control, that is handled very well. Asthita prajna has self-control. Without self-control, sense control, we all fall. So the ladder of fall, he talks in 62 and 63. Very famous verse. What is that? What is verse 62 and 63?
Dhyayato vishayan pumsah sangasteshu padhayate sangat sanjayate kamah kamat krodol pijayate krodat bhavati sammohah sammohah smriti vibramah smriti bramshat buddhinashah buddhinashat pranashyate.
So how does it all start? Dhyaya, thought. Then by thought going constantly towards an object, you develop attachment. Sangha comes. Then from sangha going constantly becomes desire, kama comes. When kama is interrupted, it becomes anger. When krodha comes, you are completely deluded. Out of delusion, what happens? Loss of memory. Smriti with brahma, smriti brahmsha buddhi nashaha. From loss of memory, discrimination is gone. Buddhi nashaha pranashyati. Your intellect is gone when you do not have any control. So, totally gone. Last time, I was smoking and I was admitted in the hospital for some heart problem. Desire for cigarette comes, all forgotten. How much you suffered, you forgot. Like they say, pregnant woman almost takes a vow that no more child in my life. You understand? Because she is going through so much of hardships. No! And once the child is born, and seeing the child, all memory gone. You understand? Then again she gets pregnant. So, it's like that. Desire, you go through all sorts of trouble. How much trouble you went through to get this good name? Within few minutes, somebody says something, your good name is gone. You understand? Like that, we suffer, all memory gone. Buddhi nasha, pranashyati, again. Kya hota hai? Again, shuru. Same story. Habits are not that easy to conquer. You are an addict now. Isn't it? So he says, buddhi nasha pranashyati. So therefore, you must have sense control. How do you rise then? How do you rise and find this true happiness? What is this true happiness? How to rise? He says, next, he says, by controlling your senses. See, immediately after 63, we go to 64. He says, therefore, you must, the self-controlled man, free from likes and dislikes, moving among the objects with the senses and control, attains peace. Right? How does he attain peace? You see this, three transactions are going on in our life. We receive the stimuli through our senses. Then the mind is registering it. The likes and dislikes are there. Immediately we do impulsive actions. We act on our likes and dislikes. What we should actually do is, you should send it to the intellect, reason it out, and then do proactive action, not impulsive action. Otherwise, we will suffer. This is called as receipt, reaction and response, the three transactions of life. Like in an industry, the raw material is coming from the outside world. It is processed inside the factory. Then the finished product goes back to the world. Similarly, we receive the stimuli from the external world. Process is going on within. The finished actions are going out. If you want your final product to be of good quality, your raw material should be of good quality. If you want your actions to be good, then you must have sense control. Not act on your likes and
how there should be response in that reaction.
What?
If you are going through intellect, then that is response.
Yeah, proactive response. Other one is impulsive response.
So that will not be reaction.
You can call it reaction, but it is more of you are responding through your actions. It's a reactive response. It's an impulsive response. Both are responses through your actions. Your actions means responding back to the world. One is impulsively, one is discriminatory.
So when the processing of the stimuli goes, that doesn't go through reason, intellect, that's when become the sense.
Yes. You should be aware of what you're doing. But do we do that? Most often, self-control is gone. So he says, you must control your senses, then you will find true happiness. Lack of self-control means destruction. Right? Lack of self-control means destruction. Then, interestingly, he says, that which is night for us is day for selfless soul. That which is night for him is beings are awake in that sense. What is he saying? I gave you the example of Mahavira. It is said Mahavira was even aware when he was sleeping. We are not even aware when we are awake. This is what they call as sleepwalking. We are not awake. When Swami Vivekananda said, awake, arise and stop not till the goal is reached. What he meant is, walk with awareness, talk with awareness, eat with awareness, sleep with awareness. We are walking, talking, sleeping and all these things without awareness. They are sleeping with awareness. Mahavira has said, even when he is sleeping, he used to sleep on one side. He will not turn. If he turns, he will be killing more insects. Basic minimum instruction when he lived. You understand? That much conscious of ahimsa, even while he is sleeping. While we are walking only, we are not aware what are your destructions we are doing. When you say something, are you aware how you are hurting other people? Just like that would say. You are not at all aware. Isn't it? So much of destruction in anger. You do so much, you are not aware what you are doing.
Sometimes we compare to do it, I mean. Sometimes, I am not saying generally.
If you are compelled to do it, you are a slave. If you consciously do it, you are a master. Consciously if you do, that is not anger. That is not losing temper, that is using temper. That's different. But don't go about justifying, because now we are all only losing temper. No using temper business. We don't have any control. Anyway, so therefore this Stita Prajna is like an ocean. There is no eye or mind. Hence he is very peaceful. And once the self is attained, thereafter there is no more delusion. There is no more getting back to delusion. Ocean, everything enters into ocean. What is constantly entering into ocean, what is constantly getting evaporated, does it have any difference to the ocean? Apurya manam achala pratishtam samudram apa pravishanti yadva. Like that, the desires enter, objects of desires enter the selfless soul. But just like our ocean digests everything that enters it, he digests everything. He will not be acting influenced by them. He directs them. That which needs to be directed, he directs. That which should not be directed, he just swallows it. That is called Stita Prajna. Once you reach the self, thereafter there is no more question of getting back to delusion. That state you get established permanently. This is what we saw in second chapter. Let's conclude.
Om Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadhaya Purnameva Vashishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.